This is the Chad Whittle Podcast.
My guest today is the host of The Morning Show with Preston Scott on 100.7 WFLA in Tallahassee, Florida. In this conversation, we discuss his radio background, what's it like to host a morning talk show in a hyper-political city, and how radio is responding to digital media. And now, my uninterrupted conversation with WFLA's Preston Scott. Preston, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
So, you've hosted the morning show in Tallahassee since 2002, about 17 years. And I'm curious, how did the morning show with Preston Scott begin?
Well, it kind of got started out of a little curiosity from the former program director at the radio station here. I was doing television work for an ABC affiliate. I was doing play-by-play for Fox Sports, and he knew my real background and love was radio. I started in radio when I was a kid and always loved the format of radio over any other. And he just inquired. He just said, Preston, would you be interested in doing a talk show? And, of course, the gentleman, the late Lee Bowen, was the voice of FSU baseball and was the program director for the radio station at the time. And he just made an inquiry, and I said, well, let's talk about it.
Before Tallahassee, I know you're not originally from Tallahassee. Did you host morning shows, talk programming in another market?
What I did is years ago when I started in radio, I was a senior in high school, Chad, and that led me to other opportunities. I was doing news for an FM radio station in Phoenix, Arizona, and that opened the door for me to go to work for one of the top radio stations in the marketplace, which was an adult contemporary talk station, which meant they did adult contemporary music in the daytime. And then in the late afternoons and evenings, they would do talk. And I was the producer for the sports talk program. However, the host would occasionally be unavailable to do the show, and I would fill in. Back in those days, radio was not as contracted as it is right now in terms of staffing, very little automation. And so as a result, to do a talk show back in the early 80s, you had to have four people. You had to have a call screener, you'd have a producer, you had to have an engineer, a board operator, and then the host, and I was the producer. And so when the host was out, it was just a matter of me sliding into his chair and then someone else sort of taking on my duties, although when you host your own show, you sort of act your own producer anyway. So it wasn't that much of a stretch, but we just had enough people to fill in. And so that's how I got started doing talk radio. That was sports talk. And it came easy because I grew up the son of a sportscaster. So talking about sports was relatively simple for me.
And what attracted you to radio as opposed to other careers, as opposed to full-time in television or newspapers or some other medium?
Well, you're going to laugh at my answer, but the reality is that even early on, television was always a visual medium. And I made a calculated decision early that while television's fine, that I really didn't want to do what my dad was doing. My dad traveled 300 days of the year doing sports for CBS and other networks. And that just wasn't something that appealed to me as I looked ahead to what it would be to be a husband and a father, and to have a life outside of traveling and to be a part of my kids' lives. The other factor for me, Chad, was simply longevity in the business. With the exception of play-by-play in television, where you can broadcast well into your advanced years if you're good at what you do, the reality is that television is still a young person's business. It's a visual medium, and people generally don't like watching other people grow old. But in radio, you can age much more gracefully. And so for me, it was a calculated decision of longevity. I felt like if I pursued radio, I would have an opportunity to maintain a career as long as I wanted to, as long as I had the skill set to do it.
That makes sense. That's really good advice for college graduates out there trying to find a job in the media industry. That's one reason I love radio too. Before I got into the academic side, is one, it's just fun to do. You're able to interact with the audience directly. You know, really, talk radio before Facebook, before Twitter, it was really the original social medium. People will call in, you could talk to them, you could have a, you know, back and forth conversation with people. And I interned at a TV station in college, and I don't know, I just find radio to be a lot more fun. I feel that you can be a lot more creative. You're not reading off a teleprompter that's been pre-determined what you're going to say. It just, it's a lot of fun. And like you said, if you look at television, you look at local news, cable news, the anchors, the reporters, they're young, you know, maybe 30, maybe 40. You don't see a lot of 60 or 70-year-olds on television. So that's really, that was a smart move that you, a smart decision that you made there. Now,
I'd like to think, sorry to interrupt, Chad, but I'd like to think that, you know, I was paying attention to sort of that tap on the shoulder that I think God gives you every now and then if you take the time to listen. But, you know, it's ironic because I think now radio is still the most social form of social communication that's out there, because ironically, we're now at a place with Facebook, Twitter, and social media where it's really not all that sociable, is it?
That's very true. I'm to the point now where I don't even want to necessarily even go on Twitter and tweet anything, because no matter what you say, even if it's not political, even if it's about sports, I'm a big Braves fan, so somebody's going to mock you for the Braves. People are just so rude and vulgar, especially on Twitter. It almost makes you not want to even log on and even see what's occurring on there, because some of it is so vulgar, especially the political side of Twitter now has gotten so, it's very not sociable, like you said.
Well, it's a result of where we are culturally. We have lost the ability to have a good conversation. You know, I grew up in an environment, Chad, you know, my aunt was the 2-term national president for the National Organization for Women. She was as liberal as there could be. She played a role in authoring Title IX. And I'm very proud of her for accomplishments in that regard. However, we could sit around the table and have a great, deep conversation about all kinds of issues and disagree and just still enjoy dinner together. And today, you see stories where people just wanting to have a nice dinner because they're wearing a hat, get an iced tea dumped on them or get into a fight with somebody. And it's just, we've lost the ability to look each other in the eye and have a civil conversation. And quite honestly, that's one of the things I really take pride in, is that I have people with varying philosophies and political ideologies on my show, and we just talk. And I enjoy that.
Yeah, let's talk about your show and politics. Tallahassee is a very political city. Of course, it's the state's capital. Florida is always a very important swing state in presidential elections. So what is it like to host a talk radio program in a very hyper-political city, especially during a presidential or state election?
Well, I don't know if you're old enough to remember, Chad, the old motto of Hallmark greeting cards, the gift that keeps on giving. That's what the political spectrum is like here in Tallahassee and, quite frankly, the nation for someone like me. It's the gift that keeps on giving. You'd have to pay somebody a lot of money to write the things that I get to talk about every day that are in the news. What's most interesting to me is how someone with a, you know, very conservative philosophy personally and professionally, how I can survive in a market that is 2-to-1 Democrat or liberal versus conservative. Tallahassee is a very liberal community with the universities that are here, Florida A&M, Florida State University. Ironically, all of the local government officials except one are all Democrats, but most all of them are my friends. I don't agree with much of what they do politically, but they're good people. generally speaking. And so as a result, I have a good relationship with many of them. But that being said, you know, you can't make up the headlines that we get every single day in the news.
There's no doubt there's never a dull moment in political talk radio, especially now with the 2020 election underway, Donald Trump as president. This has to be probably the most fun time to be hosting a talk radio program, maybe ever. There's just something different every day happening.
Yeah, that's true. I would be less than honest with you if I felt like the things that we talk about are always enjoyable to talk about. There's some that we talk about out of necessity. The way that I formatted my show is I have in my mind as I go through prepping for each program, every afternoon I'll take 3 to 4 hours and go through what's going on in the news, what's out there at various sites. I'll look at 100, 150 different articles. And then I put things into three buckets, the things that people are talking about, the things that they will be talking about, and my personal favorite, the things that I think people should be talking about. And so for my particular program, I don't necessarily talk about what the major nationally syndicated hosts are going to talk about all day long. I try to create an audio magazine format so that the listener gets something different as they tune into the program. I'll talk about what I call the big stories a couple times each hour, but then I'll move through those and I'll talk to guests. I'll talk about other things because I think that we can get caught up in a rut of saying the same things and talking about the same stories over and over again because there is a bit of an echo chamber in the mainstream media that we have to fight. And so to fight that, I try to program the radio program with different stories, not necessarily bad stories either. Sometimes they're just funny. Sometimes they're interesting. Sometimes it's about technology. Sometimes it's about history or archaeology. I was told a long time ago that in the world of talk radio, you better talk about what you're passionate about or else you're going to have a bunch of people that are bored listening to you. And so I talk about things that interest me. That's my focus. If it interests me, I believe that I'm able to convey that enough that it'll interest more people. As a result, we're in our 18th year of doing the show.
I love that because I'm 33. I've listened to talk radio pretty much my entire life, dating back to when I was a young kid listening to talk radio with my grandfather in the car while grandmother shopped. So I've heard a lot of talk radio. And it seems, I don't know when this kind of started, but the past, maybe it was with Trump, maybe before Trump with Obama, I don't remember. But it seems like some talk shows now, all they do for 3-4 hours a day is just discuss the same topic over and over and over. And they're important topics, but I don't really want to hear about the Mueller investigation for 3 hours a day. There's a lot more happening in the world other than what Donald Trump is doing, what the Democrats are saying. I feel like a lot of talk shows, they've lost that entertainment aspect of it where they're just beating the same story like a dead horse over and over and over. And from a listener perspective, it kind of gets old.
I agree with you. And that informed my decision on how I programmed this program from the very beginning. Whether that's why, you know, the show has lasted, I don't know. But I think it is because the subject matter never grows old. It is always changing. It is always different. And I want people to go away from the radio program, whether they get a chance to listen for 5 minutes or whether they circle back later and listen to the podcast for an hour and a half of straight content without commercials or news breaks. I want them to be able to say to their friends, say to their family, hey, did you hear about, and whatever that story might be, because it slipped through the cracks of their day-to-day life. I'm blessed to be able to spend time 3 to 4 hours every day going through the news, going through the good news, the bad news, the interesting news, the not so interesting news. But is there something buried in there that might be interesting? I get the privilege of doing that, 5 days a week. And so as a result, I try to create a show that has uncovered content that, I used the word years ago, infotainment. try to give information, but do it in a way that is interesting and entertaining, as you mentioned. Sometimes I'm more successful at that than others, but the audience is kind and gracious with their time, and really, I'm just sitting in the car next to them as they drive to work or do whatever it is that they're doing at work or at home, and I'm keeping them company, and I try to be a good friend.
Recently, you started a simulcast of your program on 94.5 WFLA Panama City.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years now. How has that, if it has it changed the topics that you discuss? Because now you have the Panama City audience listening as well. Are you covering the same topics? Are you trying to focus the show more on as regionally as you can, a regional focus, as opposed to just a Tallahassee focus? Or has it not changed your program at all?
Chad, that's a good question. It was a conundrum for me when the idea was first brought to me that they wanted to take the show into a market where they had a struggling morning drive presence. They didn't have a local program of any kind. They were running a syndicated show. They weren't getting results. And they wanted to have some kind of presence, but as is the case with a lot of stations, they couldn't necessarily afford the format because talk radio is the most expensive format to run because generally it requires two people. And as opposed to music, which today is voice tracked, where you know you might think the disc jockey's sitting in there for 3 or 4 hour shifts, they actually did that show in about 20 minutes. And they did something called voice tracking where they just did their in-between stuff, the music's programmed, and off they go. I'm in the studio for 3 hours, and I'm doing it live extemporaneously. When they asked me to consider Panama City, one of the first things I had to wrestle with is, okay, I'm based in Florida's capital. What do I do about my Tallahassee listeners? How do I maintain some local presence? Well, part of that is solved through local news at the top and bottom of the hour. Other parts of that are solved by just simply accepting that there will be times that I have to focus on things happening in Florida's capital city that are only impactful to those same people. Well, I do that from time to time, but I don't surrender 3 hours of the show to it. I try to make sure that I'm covering things that are relevant. Conversely, Panama City, as most people know, although a lot of people seemingly have forgotten, the Panama City area was ravaged by a Category 5 hurricane in October last year. Well, as a result, a great deal of attention has been paid and continues to be paid to the city and the area because my radio show terrestrially, forget iHeartRadio, but just on a broadcast basis on a tower, my show covers 1.5 million people or so from the Big Bend to Destin, Florida. Well, everybody within the sound of my voice got impacted by that hurricane. As a result, I have to maintain some focus and some level of attention on the recovery, on the rebuild, on the unique problems that they're facing, because it wasn't a big metropolitan area that was hit. And so as a result, there were no concerts. There were no benefit events that helped the victims of. You know, a lot of people don't know it, but right now, roughly 1 in 4 people in the area are still living in a tent or under a tarp in some fashion. That's staggering. That's nearly a year later, but no one knows it. So I've had to just talk about what I talk about. It hasn't really changed much of what I do, but I've had to be mindful of both communities and how to best serve them.
Let's talk about the format of talk radio. Pretty much all the shows that are nationally syndicated, your program as well, 3 hours a day, maybe roughly 40 minutes, around 40 minutes per hour of content.
Mm-hmm.
We live now in such a short attention span world, maybe because of the internet, social media, video games, go down the list. 10 years from now, or maybe even a couple of years from now, do you see talk radio having the same format, the same clock as it does now? 3 hours a day is a long time for people to listen to a show. Most people come in and out, you know, driving to work or whatever, turn it on at their office. Will we still have 3 hours per day of shows, or will they be cut back to maybe 2 hours or an hour, even 30 minutes? Because a lot of, and not everybody, but some shows, local regional, even some national shows, a lot of the days, you can tell the host, not the big Hannity Limbaugh, they never struggle for content, but some of the hosts, you can tell that they're really struggling by that third hour. So maybe their show would be better if it was only an hour, but they got to do two more because of, you know, various reasons. Will we still have the same formats, or will that evolve over the next couple of years as people listen differently to programming?
Well, it is changing. There's no doubt about it. The internet world has had a dramatic impact. I mean, look at what you're doing right now. That's a direct result of the internet. That's a direct result of online programming and podcasting and so forth. And look, iHeart's number one in the world in podcasts. So I'm part of a company that has seized the podcast world. In answer to your question, though, Chad, I don't think talk radio is going to be impacted, and I don't think it's been impacted thus far because, sort of where we started, it's the most intimate medium out there where people still talk. And quite candidly, the mainstream media being unreliable from an honesty and an integrity standpoint is going to continue to drive large numbers of people to programs like mine or others to hear a different version of the news, a version that is not filtered by political correctness, that that does its very best to find the true stories that are out there. And I think that as long as the mainstream media shirks its responsibility to hold elected leaders accountable to their oath of office, I think the marketplace, in fact, might expand. I think that the problem that you talk about and touch on with regard to content, I would argue that that's just lazy talk show hosts. Because as we've talked about, there's content everywhere. It's about being committed to the format and committed to being the best you can be. You know, for me, in my market, I'm in a 2 ratings book a year market. There are some that it's nonstop. I worked in one that was, you know, year round, Phoenix. But the fact is, it doesn't matter to me. Every single show I do, I treat the exact same way as if I were in my rating sweeps. And so I'm unaffected by that. I do the very best program I can do every day. I look forward to it. I'm blessed to have the job I have. I love what I do. There's not a day that I've not looked forward to it. But I think that people that want to hear 1 or 2 hours of something, or a host that wants to do 1 or 2 hours, they need to fall into the podcast format. The fact of the matter is, in our industry, they've determined that 3 hours is where it's cost effective. If you're doing 1 hour, you're not going to find a show host that's devoted to it. They might be bivocational, but they're not going to be able to make a living. And I'm able to make a living doing what I do because it's profitable for the network, the station, and me.
Let's get back to iHeartRadio. That's probably one of the smartest things that your company's done in the past couple of years. Very smart. They have 850 radio stations. They were able to promote it. Very smart idea. So let's talk about the future of talk radio. You got Rush Limbaugh, you got Sean Hannity, you got, you know, your national hosts, your regional hosts like you as well. Where will the talent come in the future? Used to, you would start at a small market, you know, a small town, work your way up. A lot of that syndicated now. Will the future host of talk radio, will they come from the podcasting world, from YouTube, from traditional radio? Where do you believe the talent is out there, the young talk talent? Where are they right now?
They're podcasting. And what's really cool about it for the future of our industry, Chad, is that Ben Shapiro has, as an example, laid out a framework for how to do it. Podcasting affords anyone, literally anyone, the opportunity to be a broadcaster and to develop their skills and to develop a following. Ben Shapiro was able to do that and parlay his podcast into what is now a 2-hour nationally syndicated program. Now, it works for Ben Shapiro. He creates programming challenges for program directors across the country to find a way to kill that third hour in their programming block. But the bottom line is, there's the model. The model is, get out there and do it. Develop a following. One of the reasons why Air America, the liberal talk radio network, failed is because what they did is they took people that were maybe famous, comedians, actors, but they weren't radio people. They were just liberals. And that doesn't work. You have to have talented radio people doing radio. It is, you know, one of the things I enjoy is when people say to me, you've got the easiest job in the world. If I make it look easy, sound easy, I am doing my job well, because it isn't easy to do what I do. And I love seeing people take a shot at it, because those that succeed, they're the people that are the future of talk radio. People that develop that gift that they have inherently and are able to use that in a way and discipline that in a way that develops an audience. And so the bright side of our industry, the future of it, I think, is, if let's look at it this way. There are exceptions, but generally speaking, podcast is the minor leagues for radio.
You're so right about radio companies giving a show, even a national show, to a politician just because, and some names started coming in my head while you were talking. I'm not going to say any names, but I don't know. I guess they feel like, oh, well, this is a well-liked politician. Let's just give him a show 3 hours a day. It'll be successful. And it never works out.
Well, I'll use names. I'll go ahead. I'll keep you from doing it. Al Franken on the liberal side, Herman Cain from the conservative side. I'm fortunate enough. I've met Herman Cain. I've had him as a guest on my program. A delightful man. Wonderful guy. He's not a radio guy. And I warned the people that were doing that show with him as the host that they didn't get a radio guy, and they'd regret it. Well, they did. Al Franken on the other side. I thought, you know, set aside Al's politics being different than mine or yours or anybody who might be listening right now, that's not relevant. What's relevant is that Al is a television comedian. He's a stage guy. He's not a radio guy. And it flamed out and failed miserably. Two examples of people that just aren't radio guys. They had two very different divergent political philosophies, but they weren't radio people. And as a result, it didn't work out.
And what's crazy to me about it is they'll give this person a national syndicated slot on their syndication company. They're not improving at the local or even the regional level that they can do this, and they just give them a national show, and it never works out. It's terrible radio.
I agree.
Oh, it's so bad. And the media, they'll build someone like Al Franken, you know, they'll build them up like, oh, this is the next talk talent. And about a year later, they're not on the radio. They're off air because their show just doesn't work.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The most popular radio personalities that are not in the talk genre, they're successful because they do talk. They play very little music in their segments. They do a format that interacts with the audience. Music is a background format. It is a background medium. Yes, there's a few people that'll have their stereos cranked up, but the overwhelming majority of folks have it on in their office as background music. They have it on in their business as background music. Talk radio is foreground. And the radio programs, whether they're talk or music, that have the biggest followings are those that embrace talk. Even if they play an occasional song every 3 or 4 minutes and might play 5 or 6 songs in an hour, the most popular personalities all revolve around talk. And that's why I believe the talk format isn't going anywhere, because it's still the place where people get to know each other, even if it's vicariously through a radio.
That's very true. And if you look at the podcasts, the ones that are the most popular, almost all of them are talk. Joe Rogan, Adam Carolla, huge audiences.
Mm-hmm.
They just sit there and talk to guests, to celebrities, to politicians, musicians, athletes. But it's talk radio, just in a different form, on a different format on the internet. But they're talking.
If you're interesting, people want to listen.
That's right. I don't remember who said it. Maybe it was a talk radio host. I don't remember, but they said, doesn't matter if you're podcasting on Sirius XM, on YouTube, on AM radio, if you have an interesting show, if you can entertain, people will find you and they will listen to you.
Word of mouth, it gets around. And if you're devoted, you know, if we're talking to somebody right now listening, they say, I want to think about doing that. Well, get to doing it. You know, talking about it is not going to get it done. Start doing, start podcasting, start practicing, start reading and researching and developing who you're going to be. My dad was the very best in his field as voted on by his peers on multiple occasions. He was a sportscaster. He was very good at what he did. My dad gave me only one piece of advice when he found out I wanted to enter broadcasting. He said, be yourself. Because when the pressure's on, that's who's showing up. My dad believed in being authentic. That's my personal conviction as well. So my advice to anybody would be authentic to who you are. And look, be very honest with yourself. I'm my own worst critic. There's nobody that's ever going to say anything to me about a show, a segment, a sequence that I've done that will be any more harsh than what I've said to myself. And so if you're honest about your own abilities, you're honest about your own skill set, and you seek to improve, and you find out, this may not be for me, okay, there is something for you. Maybe it's not that. Maybe it's something else. But the bottom line is, if you devote yourself to it and you're honest about it with yourself, then you have an opportunity to carve a place for yourself in the industry.
Preston, this has been a really fun discussion. It's been a pleasure having you on. I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
It's my pleasure. Anytime.
You can catch The Morning Show with Preston Scott live on 100.7 WFLA or listen on the iHeartRadio app. Please subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and many other great podcast apps. You can also listen on my website. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. Thank you for listening. Join me next time on the next edition of the Chad Whittle Podcast.
The Chad Whittle Podcast with Chad Whittle. Copyright 2020. All rights reserved.